ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Ed Cowan, at the completion of day two of the third test at Adelaide Oval. My name's Corbin Middlemass. I'm at the ground after a hot day of cricket. Forecast top of 39, hovered above 40 for most of the day. And Ed Cowan is in Sydney, hopefully in the air conditioning somewhere. How are you, Teddy?
Corb, I'm great. I've started to really look forward to these little end-of-day wraps because I get to see you and get the vibe from the ground when I'm not there. So watched enough cricket today. You look great in that linen shirt.
Thank
I
you.
Bought you. Early Christmas present. I was meant to go under the tree, mate.
Yes, it's just unwrapped it early. Just
like, for a 39-degree like, day,
Just like England's gift with Steve Smith not playing. And yet I've made more of mine than they have of theirs so far through the first 2 days.
Very good. What'd you make of the day's play?
Oh, that was my question to you. I mean, what happened to the Bazballers? It was crawled along, 213 after 68 overs, 8 down. Complete difference to yesterday where you look at the modes of dismissal. So Australia had 7 guys out court, 6 of them in front of the wicket, 1 which bobbled up off the glove. Today, Alex Carey took 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 catches, all of them from nicks. And all of a sudden, it felt like, yeah, despite the heat, which is meant to favour, you'd think, the batting team, it was the ball that was on top of the bat almost the entire day, and it felt like England were on with their backs against the ropes and they were merely hanging on in this test match and more broadly in the series.
Yeah, the wicket quickened up as predicted, and those that were saying 450 par, you know, look way out of the money at this rate. You know,
Look good when Scott Boland was hitting off drives to start the day. I thought, hang on, there could be a lot of runs here today.
I think the roller had a little bit of impact, but more broadly than that, the bowling and, you know, England's bowling again was atrocious. So how would I describe today? Today is the day that both teams displayed their true colours. That's how I would sum it up. So it was a Cyndi Lauper day, I think they call this one. Because what we saw from the Australians was discipline. It was the day that we had expected them to turn up with day one, probably in Perth, or the style of cricket that we know this team can play. They ground England into the dust. And on the other side, England's true colours are then they're just not as skillful as they think they are. So put Bazball in the cupboard. They just tried to bat and survive and actually find a way to counter the pressure that Australia built consistently, and they couldn't. They couldn't defend appropriately. They couldn't attack appropriately. And so what we saw was kind of where we started all the, you know, 2 years ago in the build-up is Australia, probably the best team in the world and consistent, and England inconsistent and finding a way to try and navigate a pretty low skill environment. So Australia were brilliant, England were poor, and you know, we get what we get and we don't get upset, Corb.
Yes. That's a pretty good summation of the day in a nutshell. I mean it feels like we always want to talk big picture with the Bazballers because this was meant to be it. This was meant to be the culmination of the whole project down here in Australia. But you have to look back on it and go that they weren't prepared for this at all. They weren't prepared for these style of wickets. They weren't prepared to take on this kind of attack, which is just relentless. It sort of makes you feel like, well, if this was meant to be the culmination of what they were doing, they didn't come here with a lineup or a game style that was ever going to win in these parts. Mm-hmm. And that's why they find themselves in the position they are, 2-0 down and well behind in the test at the end of day two of the third.
Yeah, I'll talk to that first and then more broadly. But the word relentless was exactly how Australia bowled, and we'll talk to the length. We'll unpack that a little bit. But I ran a thought experiment with two friends at lunch, both very good cricket minds, played a lot of first-grade cricket here in Sydney. And the thought experiment was, what if they'd gone the other way 2 years ago and that actually lent into county results and, you know, Hamid opens the batting having scored 500. It's not a, you know, they just park style of play to one side and they pick a Jack Leach, for instance, who consistently is, you know, seen as the best county spinner. And they just aggregate a group of experienced campaigners to come down here and just do their best, would the outcome be better or worse than what we're seeing right now?
I mean, it's impossible to say, isn't it? You can never prove the counterfactual, but what they've got and what the style they play in at home, one thing we know for sure, Teddy, it's not suited to playing down here. And it's a far too familiar story for England. The optimism of getting on the plane and coming down under and feeling like we're rolling a bit of momentum in, and ultimately they're in the same spot they've been so often. Six of the last seven series now, they've been 2-0 down, headed into the third test. And the same situation again. And that they look helpless. They look like they don't have the firepower in this battle where they're getting completely blown away. And it's defensive mode at the moment, but we know what the next thing is. The next thing's the, you know, back to the boxing analogy, is the referee coming in to wave it off.
Absolutely, towel thrown into the ring. And the word that comes to mind that where they've been showed up is the discipline. And let's talk with the ball first. The first two overs this morning were the exact, or even the first 10 overs, and they mirrored the first 10 overs of yesterday as well, just lack the ability to do something so basic as know where the ball is going. Imagine walking out to bat and being fed 5 cut shots.
Yeah.
And so the discipline to actually execute a skill for any period of time. Compare that to Australia, who bowled fifth stump or sometimes tighter, top of the stumps. I would hate to see the stats of balls, you know, that little square patch that they bring up on the infographic, the number of balls Australia bowled in that little patch that we know from 5 metres to 3 metres between fifth stump and off stump. And they were relentless and they were disciplined. And England couldn't do anything about it. And conversely, with the ball, they couldn't produce those balls. And so it's not just one facet of the game that's being exposed. It's all of it. And that's where, you know, when I talk to both teams exposing themselves and their true colours, it's so clear to me. It really is. And, you know, you got to commend the Aussies because they have the ability to do it under pressure, in the heat, the heat of battle. And they were excellent, be it Lyon, be it Boland, be it Cummins, who was superb. And England just, they look like they have zero answers.
And it was hot today too. Like the forecast top, as I said, was 39, and yet it hovered above 40 for most of the day. And yet Australia didn't waver from what they were doing, and England's hopes in the series clearly melted underneath it. I wasn't alive in the late 50s when Peter May took his team down to Australia, and all the headlines back home at that stage, Teddy, was the strongest team ever to leave England. And they came down here and they played Richie Beno's team and they lost 4-0. Beno ended up starring as part of that and took 30-something wickets and everything else. And it feels like this is our version of that. You know, however many years on it, Australia's never seen as quick a bowling unit that England's going to unleash, and the Baz ballers are coming, and they're ascending as the Australians are on the way down, and it's almost like the two things are going to dovetail, and this is England's chance to win down here. And instead of being a once in a 20-year team, it's the same old story, unfortunately, for England, where the series could be over before we hit Christmas. I got a message, Teddy, from Michael, one of our listeners, who sent this through late in the day, saying, "Corbin, long-time listener of the pod, love yours and Teddy's work. I have a question which I'd love to have thrown into your discussions today. Is the way that Ben Stokes bats an admission that the tactics of Bazball don't work, or that he lacks conviction in it?" So it stumps. He is 45 off 151 balls.
Great question. My gut feel on the spot is no. I think Ben Stokes is flexible enough in his thinking and scope as captain to say, I'm actually willing to do whatever is possible to just drag this team into the contest. So Bazball, it doesn't work when you're 300 behind and you got no batters. And so it's not up to him at six. I think what we've seen actually in his last two innings is some stoicism and the ability to say, Bazball is about, what you see on the surface in England is about applying pressure and absorbing pressure through attack. He's kind of parked that last little bit and say, Bazball's about applying pressure and absorbing pressure and in the moment determining how best to do that. And more often than not, that means attack. In this case, he's decided that isn't the case, and he's shown some flexibility in doing that. I don't know. It's a good question. Do you have a view?
So only a statistical one, which was thrown out there late in the day, that the only other time in Ben Stokes's career where he'd faced as many balls and scored as few runs.
Headingley.
Headingley 2019.
Headingley and
2019.
What happened? Yeah, exactly.
They won the test and
exactly.
He got that memorable 100. So it's sort of, I was probably more in that camp today than I was he's making a statement or it's, I was a bit like, what's he meant to do? He's batting with the lower order and it's sort of all I could think of was maybe if more players batted like him, maybe they'd be in a different position in the test match and tire the Aussie quicks out. Like the Aussies were able to find a rhythm and Nathan Lyon, who both you and Darren Lehman spoke so much about last night, saying look he's going to be the pivotal figure from here going forward one way or another, immediately comes on today, gets 2 wickets in his first over and he's allowed to settle into his rhythm and from that point on, whatever plan they had against him to try and hit him out of the attack, it was. Save the test match mode as opposed to attack, because he was able to settle into his work and all of a sudden he became an issue.
Yeah, the one that, kind of threading these two themes together, the one that had the opportunity to take Lyon out of the attack was probably Harry Brook. Ryan had a batsman, got himself in, the game at that point, they were 3 for 60 or 70. Yes, they'd lost 2 quick wickets, but he could have counterattacked. It's not, by the time Ben Stokes came, Root had already gone. And then Brook went. And so, there were moments that they could have put the foot down, but instead they realised the series was on the line. And yes, baseball can have moments of being effective, but in actual fact, when it's 39 degrees, the best way to apply pressure is just make them bowl for a long period of time.
Yeah.
It feels off brand, but I didn't mind the tactics. They just didn't have the skill to execute it. I didn't know we're taking viewer sentiment in these short form podcasts. Any other messages?
The only other one I got was from Rosie talking about the podcast yesterday, basically saying that they enjoyed the conversation around the Santa Ana grass. So who'd have thought that after a little stumps quick hit just to get Teddy's thoughts at the end of the day.
People think they're turning up for, a wrap of the day's play and they're getting, an agronomy lesson, hardly. Yeah. All fun.
Hats off to Nathan Lyon too, who obviously went past Glenn McGrath today. So the goat goes past the pigeon into second spot for most test wickets. The king's still out there on top.
That's good.
And I don't know if you saw the reaction from Glenn McGrath, our good friend in the box next door to us on the BBC, where he pretended to pick up the chair and smack it on the ground in frustration. But gee, took it in good spirits and a bit of fun on what was a pretty hot day at the cricket.
I mean, amazing from Nathan Lyon. And then you see the list and you see Mitchell Starc at 4. And you see Nathan Lyon at 2, and you see Pat Cummins, the lowest strike rate of any Australian bowler ever, over 150 wickets in Australia. And you think, why did we ever think England were a chance?
Yeah.
Like, this is probably the greatest fast bowling quartet playing as a triumvirate, in this case, plus a spinner, that Australia's ever had. And we think England are going to turn up here and boss them? We were kidding ourselves.
They got to lose 3 out of 5. This is a team that's lost like one of their last 11 test matches. They don't lose too much anywhere, let alone in home conditions. And then when you look at the other side of things, if you're trying to make the case for England, you'd think Woods bowled 11 wicketless overs. They lost Broad and Anderson, even Moeen Ali, Chris Wokes since the last Ashes, which they drew. So they've lost like 1,800 test wickets. Mm. And they come down here with a relatively unproven attack. And we've seen how that's gone for them.
One thing that caught my eye tactically, and maybe you spoke about it on the broadcast, the plan to just start around the wicket, all the fast bowlers start around the wicket to left-handers. So, and do it poorly, by the way. And so when we talk about their execution, things come to mind of, if I'm an opening batter and the opening bowler is coming around the wicket, I feel like I've had a win straight away because you're basically halving the amount of ways you can get out. And so, just those little tactical moments, they've been so focused on this is our plan and this is how we're going to execute it. And I understand they haven't been able to execute it, so it looks bad. But it's almost as though these fast bowlers, for a fast bowler, sometimes it's nice to get your rhythm over the wicket rather than having to start a new spell or with a new ball in your hand and you come straight around the wicket because the actions are finessed and kind of nuanced. And it's like they've had no rhythm whatsoever. They haven't been able to get into a spell and actually build pressure at any point in time. And, you know, we didn't really see the Australians do that today. We saw them operate largely from over the wicket, you know, even to duck it early, and build pressure by just keeping all forms of dismissal in the game at all times. And it's super simple. Mm-hmm. Like, this ain't rocket science. It's like they've got too funky for their own good.
No doubt. And, you know, Ben Stokes is their leading wicket taker in the calendar year, which, you know, we love Ben Stokes. He's an absolute warrior. If you come into Australia to beat Australia in their own conditions, Ben Stokes is not your leading wicket taker. Like, no. You need a proper sort of, elite attack that can come down here and lead the way. And all of that said, you know, Jofra Archer was outstanding. Like, this is as good as we've seen him throughout the series. So 20.2 overs, 5 maidens, 5 for 53. And yet everything you said proves the point because the pressure was completely relieved at the other end. You know, Cass was expensive again and wild, particularly with the new ball.
He was unbowlable.
Yeah. Cass, Tongue struggled. And then Will Jacks, who didn't bowl today, but went the journey yesterday. So, tough sledding for England. Just on Pat Cummins and Joe Root, so it was the matchup you spoke so much about, felt like over the winter months and in the lead up to the series, and how would Root go? And we know he's obviously ticked one box and got the 100 here, and a few of our listeners weren't too happy with you, Teddy. Felt like you didn't give him his flowers, the appropriate credit for that. Well, he's looking at his old nemesis today, and all of a sudden he's out again. So 12th time that Pat Cummins picks him up in Test cricket, more than any other bowler.
And you know what Joe Root is thinking as he lies in bed staring at the ceiling tonight? I got set up. Length, perfect cross seam bumper that skids, and Root plays a pull shot, but it got on him. You know, it was a tuck around the corner, not a full cream for four. Next ball, probably expecting something similar, stuck on the crease, doesn't get forward, hands push at the ball. Great piece of bowling. You know, all of Cummins' wickets angle in half a bat's width seam away. It's unbelievable bowling, but it's about length control and the skill to build the pressure in the first instance to create some doubt. And the Australians looked a better attack with him playing for a bloke that hadn't bowled a ball in a competitive game for 5 months.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
I mean, he was unbelievable. He had it on a string.
Yeah. He's incredible player. As we continue to learn and continue to see, and we're lucky to have lived through his career, and it continues to roll on. And there's every chance that I don't think they present the trophy, but Australia could have the earning they're keeping by the end of this Test match, and it certainly appears that way. The way this is trending, that the DRS, it's going to be the sort of news angle storyline hook again. We had the controversy really late last night after we recorded, where really the guys that operate the DRS essentially said there was a user error contributed to the fact that Alex Carey was given not out on 72, where he appeared to nick it. The sound wave didn't match up. The wrong sound wave or the wrong sound audio piece was selected. And as a result, it ended up costing, you know, Carey was able to go on and add another 30-odd and get his 100. But I think the score went from 245 to 320, basically, in the in-between where they finally got Carey out. So it cost England some 80 runs. And then sure enough, as often happens in sport and in the world, whenever there's one instance, boom, 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 there was multiple of them again today. So Jamie Smith involved in two different incidents, both of which involved Snicko, both of which involved the DRS, and both of which, Teddy, will be hotly debated again, I'm sure, around the water cooler later tonight and tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it's not a good look. That's for sure. Maybe Sachin was right all those years ago, not trusting the DRS. Having played in the era when it was being introduced, players always were very skeptical. And then over time, that skepticism kind of dissipated and really dissolved to quite a high trust of the technology. And particularly in the developed cricket nations, sometimes, you know, you get some outliers when the host broadcaster isn't quite you know, as technically skilled as others, and they have these third-party vendors and, you know, producers and the like. This is an anomaly, really, for Australian Test cricket. We don't see this very often, but it's an old-fashioned cock-up. I mean, I didn't see the Jamie Smith one, but I, you know, I didn't. When I saw Alex Carey live, I was like, oh, he's nicked that, bummer. And then I was like, oh, that's a bit weird, but, you know, technology is what the technology is, and play on. And then for him to, you know, so wholesomely kind of say, oh, yeah, I thought I hit it, kind of set the wheels in motion, because without that, they wouldn't have admitted error at all.
I got two views on this. I got the micro and the macro. So we'll start firstly with the zoomed in lens on this particular incident. I feel like what's happening in this test match and the lack of faith in the DRS, that they should actually do something dramatic, like basically say, hey, you know, Chris Gaffney and the responsibility of the TV umpire to use what happens on the Snicko as, you know, the final arbiter to override everything else. We should throw that out in this test match. Yeah. Like we know that we don't have the faith in it that we need to. And that's been admitted by, you know, the operators themselves for the error that happened. And then the two different instances that happened today where, yeah, I think everybody saw it hit the glove. Whether it carried to Kawaja or not was another debate. And yet we never got there because we were told, no, it hasn't hit his glove because there was no sound wave that formed and so bounced off his helmet. And then basically the third umpire is left with nothing else to do. He says, look, there's no sound wave. He hasn't hit it. Don't worry about whether he took the catch or not, because I can't give it out from this position. He's got his hands tied because he has to lean on what the Snicko says. Like we can change that mid-test and basically say, let's use the Snicko to support the decision-making, but let's not, you know, absolutely, you know, live and die by what happens on the Snicko, certainly in the short term for this test match. I actually think that's something they can change overnight and say, you know, leading into tomorrow and the rest of the test match, we'll use all the technology that we have available, but we won't necessarily go all in on the sound wave. And then my broader view, and this is always my view when it comes to technology and sport, the same in the AFL, the same in the cricket, and I know our listeners will probably be sick of me saying it, the perfect is the enemy of the good. That it feels like when it comes to technology, it's not perfect, and we all sort of obsess over it, that we always want, you know, it to be 100% accurate. But this is way better than what we had in the past. And if you know, we look back on it with rose-colored glasses and everything else, but say we get 80% of them reversed or more correct than what they were by the on-field umpires, I think the game's better off for that than what we were, you know, going back, say, 15, 20 years ago. So I actually am willing to live with, you know, these ones that live in the margins, and whether it scrapes across the grass or whatever it turns out to be, I don't get too bent out of shape by that, because I feel like the absolute shockers, we've got a system in place now that takes care of those, and everything else is sort of, for me, a little bit of a tedious debate.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Back to the first point, do you think that requires a captain's agreement? Both captains need to agree to that to change the playing condition in the middle of the game?
I actually think they would. Well, since when
I
do we
think they
get
would. I don't think there's any...
Since when do we reinstate reviews?
Like, well, I've never seen that, because a player admitted that he hit it and Snicko didn't give him out.
Ridiculous.
Mean, that like, felt wild in and of itself.
Yeah. And so my theory is, well, if we're going to change that, we may as well just say, well, rather than reinstating the reviews for everyone they get wrong, let's just say, hey, we don't really have the faith in Snicko we want to right now. We're going to work on that. In the meantime, let's use the other technology that we have to help our decision making. Yeah. I feel for Chris Gaffney too. Imagine how he's feeling every single time one gets
he
sent
starts,
through the...
starts double-guessing himself, and then you had the Alex Carey catch, which kind of looked like his fingers were under it, but they couldn't get the angle zoomed in. They've had a real shocker. Yeah.
30 degrees. I think it was meant to be 32. It's dropped slightly, the forecast for tomorrow. And England crawling along after 68 overs, 8 for 213 is where they'll resume at day 3. Have I missed anything, Teddy, on the way out?
76 overs bowled in the day, 2 for the changeover. Mm-hmm. I know we talk about this a lot. Are we happy? Are we entertained? Or are we kind of disappointed that you got shortchanged 9% of your fee for coming to the game?
How many, if I was to say to you, how many overs are you going to get at a day's test cricket? You'd probably say, I don't know, in modern cricket, 82, 83, something like that. And I feel like when it's 40 degrees, you probably discount that 4 or 5, and that gets us back to around 78. And that's really the game we play nowadays, isn't it? The sooner the ICC come out and say, hey, the new target's 82 or whatever, the better. New ball after 70 overs. Let's do that.
I'm here for it. I think we can think of something to change the debate.
I've got lots of Big Bash to chat to you about on our Monday episode.
That's Monday.
There's some good stuff going on. And in the world of Test cricket, did you see the New Zealand West Indies score today when you're on flicking through the scores on what was happening?
Talk to me.
One for 334, the West Indies bowling. They've got one wicket, and New Zealand are absolutely giving it to them in Mount Maunganui. So Conway, 178 not out. Latham, 137. The openers put on 323. The only wicket that fell was in the last hour. It's the highest standby New Zealand opening pair since 1972. What an outrageous start to the third test across the ditch.
It makes me a bit sad.
That was after the West Indies gallant effort and the draw in the second test and everything else. It's it's all the Black Caps over there at this stage after the first day. We'll be back tomorrow, Teddy. Thanks for carving time out of your busy schedule late on a Thursday night. What are we, a week before Christmas? Here we are, and Christmas comes early for us as cricket fans. As the Ashes rolls on, I'll chat to you tomorrow night.
Can't wait.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.